One night, at the height of the 1944 air raids on London, Major Porter told me the strange story of Rosaline Claude. Her first husband had been reported dead up country in Central Africa, and she had married a second time, Gordon Claude, a multimillionaire who was killed when a bomb fell on their house and who left her his immense fortune. But the really curious thing about the story was that the girl's first husband, Robert Underhay, could be still alive, for he had told the Major that he might disappear and turn up again 1,000 miles away as a Mr. Enoch Arden.
John Moffat as Hercule Poirot in Agatha Christie's Taken at the Flood.
And so my curiosity was thoroughly awakened when I read in the morning paper of the mysterious death at an inn in the village of Wormsley Vale, where all the Claude family lived, of a Mr. Enoch Arden.
Thank you for coming round so promptly, Mr. Claude. It's Mr. Rowley Claude, isn't it?
That's right, Superintendent.
Difficult with so many members of the same family living in the village. Now, I understand you may be able to throw some light on this problem we're investigating. The man who was killed last night at the Stag.
Have you identified the fellow?
No, I wouldn't say we have. He signed the register as Enoch Arden. There's nothing in his possession to show that he was Enoch Arden. Now, I understand that you went to see him last night. Why did you do that?
Presumably you've talked to Beatrice Lippincott at the Stag.
She found the body, and I've heard her story.
So she told you what she overheard, about the possibility that Robert Underhay might still be alive.
Yes, she did mention it.
Well, I hardly need to explain that if he were alive, it would make a big difference to the family. I had taken it for granted that Rosalind Claude's first husband was definitely dead. It took me a bit of time to realize the implications of it all. I had to let the possibilities sink in, if you know what I mean.
I can appreciate that.
My first instinct was to talk it all through with my uncle. He's a lawyer.
Mr. Jeremy Claude, you mean?
Yes, so I went round to see him. Must have been some time after 8. They were still at dinner, so I sat in Jeremy's study to wait for him.
Yes, Mr. Claude?
And I began to have second thoughts. Jeremy's very cautious. I suppose all lawyers are. Likes to play everything by the book. And the information I'd got had come to me in rather a hole-and-corner manner. He might not be very happy about acting on it. I thought perhaps I should find out more about this Enoch Arden before taking things any further.
So you called in on him at the Stag?
Yes, I did.
And what time was it?
I wouldn't like to say exactly. About 8:30. Perhaps nearer to 8:40.
Carry on, Mr. Clerk.
Well, I knew where he was. Beatrice had given me the number of his room, so I went straight up. Somehow I don't think I handled the business very well. I thought he'd be frightened when I hinted he was up to a bit of blackmail, but this only seemed to amuse him. He asked me if I was in the market too, as a buyer. He wanted to know how much I, or the family, would be prepared to pay for proof that Robert Underhay was still alive and kicking.
So what was your answer, Mr. Claude?
Well, I asked him why the devil I should pay anything at all. And he laughed and said, because I've got a client coming later this evening who will certainly pay a very substantial sum for proof that Robert Underhay is dead. Well, I'm afraid I rather lost my temper at that and told him that my family weren't used to doing that kind of dirty business. If Underhay was still alive, the fact ought to be quite easy to establish. And he looked me straight in the eye and said in rather a funny tone, I don't think you'll prove it without my cooperation.
And then?
I went back home, feeling rather disturbed. Frankly, I felt I'd rather messed things up. I wished I'd left it to Uncle Jeremy to tackle after all. A lawyer's used to dealing with slippery customers.
What time did you leave the Stag?
It must have been before 9, because I heard the pips for the news coming from the window of a house in the village.
Did Arden say who this client was that he was expecting?
He didn't, but I took it for granted that it was David Hunter. Who else would it be?
I thought he was supposed to be up in London.
He is, but he was definitely in Walmsley Vale yesterday. I saw him get off the train.
These tongs. Did you notice them in the grate, Mr. Close? No, don't touch them.
I don't think I did. The fire wasn't lit. Were they what?
Yes. According to the medical evidence, he was struck down from behind, and the blows with the tongs were delivered from above.
Arden was a pretty cocksure sort of chap, but all the same, I wouldn't have turned my back on a man I was trying to bleed white. Particularly a man like Hunter, who'd done some pretty tough fighting with the commandos.
Yes, if he'd been a bit more cautious, he'd probably still be alive.
If only I hadn't stalked out like that. I ought to have pretended the family were in the market. But who were we to compete against Rosalind and her brother? They'd have had no trouble in raising the money.
Have you seen this lighter before?
I have seen it somewhere, yes. D.H. Not much doubt whose initials those are.
And this lipstick?
Not really in my line, Superintendent.
Brunette colouring, I should say.
It's funny the things you policemen know. So, there's a lady in the case, is there? And you definitely have not been able to identify the dead man.
Have you any ideas yourself, Mr. Claude?
None at all. But this fellow seemed to be the only connection to Underhay. Now that he's dead, finding Underhay is going to be like looking for a needle in a haystack.
The murderer is bound to generate a good deal of publicity. If Underhay is alive and gets to read about it, he may come forward.
I shouldn't think there's much chance of that. All the more reason now for him to continue to lie low. I rather think that round one has gone to David Hunter.
Who are you? What do you want?
Mr. Hunter.
What if I am? How the devil did you get past the porter in the hall?
Superintendent Spence from Walmsley Vale. Can I have a word with you, sir?
I'm so sorry, Superintendent. I thought you were a tout. Won't you come in?
Thank you.
Rosaline, this is Superintendent Spence.
Oh, good afternoon, Superintendent.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Clare.
Do sit down. Can I get you a drink?
No, thank you, Mr. Hunter.
So, what's amiss in Walmsley Vale? Has our cook been dealing on the black market?
It's rather more serious than that. A man was found with his head stove in a room at the Stag early this morning.
Please, Superintendent, no more details. My sister is rather delicate. If you mention blood and horrors, she'll probably faint.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Claude. Anyway, it was murder. No question of that.
So where do we come in?
We hoped you might be able to tell us something about the dead man, Mr. Hunter.
Why me?
You called to see him on Saturday evening last. His name, or the name he was registered under, was Enoch Arden.
Oh, that chap. Well, I'm afraid I can't help you. I know next to nothing about the man.
What's his name, really, Enoch Arden?
I should very much doubt it.
Why did you go to see him?
He spun me one of the usual hard luck stories, mentioned people I'd known in the war.
Did he mention any other names to you? That of Robert Underhay, for instance?
What makes you mention him?
Information received.
Do you have any idea who Underhay was, Superintendent?
Suppose you tell me, sir.
He was my sister's first husband. He died in Africa some years ago.
I'm quite sure of that.
Oh, yes. That is so, isn't it, Rosaline?
Robert died of fever, Blackwater fever.
Sometimes stories get about that aren't quite true, Mrs. Claude.
Robert is dead.
From information in my possession, I understand that this man, Arden, claims to be a friend of Robert Underhay, and informed you that he was alive.
That's nonsense.
You definitely state that the name of Robert Underhay was not mentioned?
Oh, it was mentioned. Ah. The poor fellow had known Underhay.
There was no question of blackmail.
Blackmail? I don't understand you.
Don't you really, Mr. Hunter? Just as a matter of form, where were you last night between 7 and 11?
Just as a matter of form, Superintendent, suppose I refuse to answer.
Aren't you behaving rather childishly?
I don't think so. I've always disliked being bullied. And now will you get the hell out of here?
Very good, sir, but I've something to ask Mrs. Claude first.
I won't have my sister worried.
Quite so. But I want her to look at the body and tell me if she can identify it. I'm within my rights there. Why not let her come down to Walmsley Vale with me and get it over with? Arden knew Underhay, you say, so he may have known Mrs. Underhay, and therefore she may know him.
I'll come, of course, Superintendent.
Good for you, Rosaline.
Do you want me to come now?
That would be very nice of you, Mrs. Claude. I'll arrange for a car to take you down.
Don't worry, Rosaline. I'll be with you.
Will that be all right, Superintendent?
Certainly. I'll let them know we're on our way.
It'll only take a minute, Rosaline. Don't get worked up. He'll look perfectly peaceful, just as if he were asleep. Be a brave girl now. In you go.
You must think I'm a terrible coward, Superintendent. But when you find that everyone in the house is dead, all dead but you...
I understand, Mrs. Clove. It must have been a terrible experience. Are you ready?
I'm ready. God rest his soul. I've never seen that man before in my life. I don't know who he is.
So that settles it, Mr. Claude. She says that he's not Robert Underhay, and that she's never seen him before.
Does it settle it?
Settles it, Mr. Claude. I think a jury would believe her in the absence of evidence to the contrary.
Evidence to the contrary? Thank you, Superintendent.
And it was at this point I re-entered the story. For 3 days later, my manservant, Georges, announced that a Mr. Holy Claude had come to see me.
It's rather a long story, I'm afraid.
It was indeed a long story, much of which I already knew. But, at long last, Mr. Claude came to the point.
What I'm after is this. I want you to find out who this Enoch Arden really was.
Who do you think he was, Mr. Claude?
Well, I mean, Enoch Arden. It isn't a real name. I looked it up. It's a poem by Lord Tennyson about a chap who comes back from a long voyage and finds that his wife has married some other fellow.
And him that other reigning in his place, lord of his rights and of his children's love.
Well, quite.
Very touching story. But the Enoch Arden of the poem chose never to reveal himself. The man found dead at the Stag was obviously a very different kind of character. And you suspect he might have been Robert Underhay himself. Was there anything that might identify him?
Only the fact that he'd registered at the Stag under Enoch Arden.
What about his papers?
He didn't have any.
What, no letters? Not even a ration card?
Nothing at all.
Well, that is very interesting. And was Rosaline Claude asked by the police to identify the body?
Yes, she was. She told them that he was a complete stranger to her.
Eh bien, then that answers your question.
I don't think it does. If the dead man is Underhay, then Rosaline was never my uncle's wife, and she's not entitled to a penny of his money. So she had a very good reason not to recognize the body.
But surely there are plenty of people who could say for certain that the dead man is or is not Robert Underhay.
It doesn't seem to be so easy. That's what I want you to do. Find someone who knows Underhay.
Why me?
I heard a fellow talking about you. Said you were a wizard at that sort of thing. I don't know about your fees. We're rather a stony broke family. But I dare say we could cough it up amongst the lot of us.
Someone who knows Robert Underhay. Yes, I think that perhaps it might be managed. In fact, I am certain it can. Will you come back here this afternoon?
Yes, I suppose I could. But surely you can't do anything in that short a time.
I have my methods.
Of course. I don't know how you people do these things.
But in fact, the problem presented no difficulty. I had only to look up the address of the man who told me the whole strange story in the first place, Major Porter of 22A Camden Hill, and take Rowley Claude along to meet him.
It's very good of you to see us at such short notice, Major.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I can't offer you a glass of sherry, I'm afraid. My wine merchant never recovered from losing all his stock in the Blitz. Cigarette, Monsieur Poirot.
Thank you.
You don't, I know. Mind if I light my pipe? Now then, what's all this about,
You may have read in the papers of the death of a man in the village of Walmsley Vale.
May have. Don't think so.
His name was Arden. Enoch Arden.
He was found in a room at the Stag Inn with the back of his head smashed in.
Oh, yeah, I do remember reading something about that.
I have a photograph. It is a press photograph. What we should like to know, Major, is whether you have ever seen this man before.
Wait a sec. Just let me get my spec. Now then, God bless my soul. Well, I'm damned.
You know the man?
Yeah, of course I know him. It's Underhay, Robert Underhay.
You're sure of that, Major?
Of course I'm sure. Robert Underhay, I'd swear it anywhere.
We've won, Lynn. Don't you see? Rosalind's marriage was invalid because her husband was still alive. She doesn't get Gordon's money. We get it. It's ours. The will that he made after his marriage is invalid. The one he made long before Rosalind came into his life still holds good, and that divides his inheritance between the immediate family. I get a fourth share. That'll set us up very handsomely.
Are you sure of what you're saying, Ray?
Of course I'm sure. It's elementary. If her first husband was alive when she married Gordon, she was never really married to him at all. So everything's all right. Everything's the way Gordon really meant it to be. It's as if that precious pair had never existed.
But what will they do?
I don't know. Go back to wherever they came from, I suppose.
But they won't have anything at all.
Well, yes, I can't help feeling sorry for Rosalind.
You rather like her, don't you?
Well, yes, I do, in a way. She's a nice kid. She knows a thing or two about farming, too.
It's more than I do. How do you know this?
She's passed by Long Willows a couple of times. We got talking. She was brought up on a farm in Ireland. Knows all about buttermaking and dairy produce. And she knows a good heifer when she sees one.
They were the same to me.
Oh, well, you'll soon learn.
But what about David?
Well, to hell with David. It was never his money anyway. He just came along and sponged off his sister.
He isn't a sponger. A bit of an adventurer, perhaps.
Why do you have to jump to his defense all the time? Still, he'll get what's coming to him.
What do you mean by that?
Well, who do you think killed Underhay? Hunter was here that day. He came down by the 5:30.
What time was Underhay killed?
I don't know exactly. We shall hear at the inquest tomorrow, sometime between 9 and 10, I imagine.
David caught the 9:20 train back to London.
Well, how do you know that?
I met him. He was running to catch it.
And how can you be sure he caught it?
Because he telephoned me from London when he got back.
What the hell did he telephone you for?
It doesn't matter.
It matters to me. I won't have him forcing his way into your life, coming between us.
Oh, stop talking nonsense. Anyway, it shows that he caught that train.
Well, it still gives him plenty of time to have killed Underhay. But there's no point going on about David Hunter. The great thing is that now I can get Long Willow smartened up. I don't want you to have to pig it down there, old girl. I want it to be a proper home for you.
Yes, a proper home.
Well, you don't have to look so glum about it.
The inquest was held in the old corn market at Wormsley Vale, and I decided that it was time for me to take an active interest. All the clothes were there, and Major Potter, fidgeting and ill at ease. David Hunter and Rosaline sat by themselves. Beatrice Lippincott, wearing a distressingly bright green suit, reported the conversation she had overheard between Enoch Arden and David Hunter, and Rowley Claude told of his own interview with the man, doing his best to incriminate Hunter. But it was David Hunter himself who caused a real sensation in the court.
The first I knew of the man who called himself Enoch Arden was when he sent me a letter asking for assistance and stating that he had known my sister's first husband in Africa.
You still have that letter?
I don't keep letters.
You have heard the account given by Beatrice Lippincott of your conversation with the deceased. Is it a true account?
Totally untrue. She obviously couldn't hear much of what was said and invented most of it from her over-fertile imagination. The man simply told me a long, hard luck story and asked me for money.
Did he tell you that Robert Underhay was still alive?
No. He simply said that if Underhay had been alive, he would have helped him out.
Now, Mr. Hunter, did you visit the deceased again on the night of Tuesday?
No, I did not.
You have heard Mr. Rowley Claude say that the man was expecting a visitor.
He may have expected a visitor, but I was not that visitor. I'd given the man a fiver. I thought that was enough. There was no proof that he had really known Robert Underhay. Since my sister inherited a large income from her second husband, she has been the target of every sponger in the neighborhood.
Then will you tell us where you were on that Tuesday evening?
Find out.
Mr. Hunter... That is a most foolish and ill-advised thing to say.
Why should I tell you where I was or what I was doing? It's
Time enough for that when you accuse me of murdering the man.
If you persist in your attitude, it may come to that sooner than you think. You recognize this cigarette lighter?
Let me see. Yes, it's mine.
When did you have it last?
I can't exactly remember. Where was it found?
That will be gone into at the proper time, Mr. Hunter. You may stand down.
Next to be called was Major Potter. He stood to attention, as if he were on parade. But he seemed uncharacteristically nervous.
You have viewed the body of the deceased?
I have.
Can you identify the body?
Yes. It is the body of Robert Underhay.
You have not the least doubt of that?
None whatsoever.
When Rosaline Claude was called, I watched her with great interest. Major Porter looked at her, too, but she did not even glance at him.
Mrs. Claude, I understand you were taken by the police to see the body of the deceased.
Yes.
And you stated definitely that the body was not that of your first husband, Robert Underhay.
Yes.
In view of the statement just made by Major Porter, would you like to withdraw or amend that?
No.
You still assert that the body was not that of your first husband.
It was not his body. It was a man I'd never seen in my life.
You are not under oath in this court, Mrs. Claude, but it is likely that you will be under oath in another court shortly. Are you prepared to swear that the body is not that of Robert Underhay, but of an unknown stranger?
I am prepared to swear that it is not the body of my husband, but of a man quite unknown to me.
You may stand down, Mrs. Claude. Quiet, please. We are here to determine how this man who called himself Enoch Arden came by his death. There can be no question of accident or suicide. There remains only one verdict: willful murder. And, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you now have to decide if there is any evidence as to whose hand it was that killed the deceased. You may think that the evidence points to a particular person, but a good deal of investigation as to motive and opportunity needs to be carried out before such a case can be made. If there is no such evidence, the best verdict is that of willful murder without sufficient evidence to show by whose hand. Such a verdict leaves the police free to pursue their necessary inquiries.
The jury were dismissed to consider what they had heard, and within three quarters of an hour, they returned a verdict of willful murder against David Hunter.
I was afraid they'd do that. Local prejudice, of course.
It's premature, to say the least, and it hampers us. Do you know Monsieur Poirot? He was instrumental in bringing Major Porter forward.
Oh, I have heard of you, of course, Monsieur Poirot.
It is a very intriguing case. Mm. The story of Robert Underhay has interested me ever since I first heard it from Major Porter, nearly 2 years ago.
It raises some very curious points, of course. Underhay spoke of the possibility of faking his death and of returning under the name of Enoch Arden.
But would such a thing be admissible as evidence? Words spoken by a man who is now dead? But I must be on my way. Delighted to make your acquaintance, Monsieur Poirot. Mm-hmm. Goodbye, Superintendent.
Goodbye.
You're not happy about the case?
That Hunter chap worries me. You never know where you are with that sort. When they're innocent, they act as if they're guilty. And when they're guilty, you take your oath they were angels of light.
You think he's guilty?
Don't you? As far as the Claude family are concerned, Robert Underhay would be sent from heaven to restore the family fortunes.
I agree entirely.
Whereas Rosaline and her brother have every motive for wanting Underhay out of the way. And there's another point. After they both rushed off back to London...
That is one of the things that interests me most.
She goes straight round to Bond Street to sell some of the jewellery her husband left her. It looks as if she wanted a large sum of money quickly. In other words, She had to pay a blackmail.
And you call that evidence against David Hunter?
Don't you?
Evidence that there was blackmail, yes. Evidence of intent to commit murder, no. You cannot have it both ways. Either the young man was going to pay up, or else he was planning to kill. Now tell me, Superintendent, is there anything to establish the time of the murder?
The man's wristwatch was smashed. Mm. The hands were pointing to 9:10. Oh, I know it's a hoary old trick. Turn the hands of the watch to a time that suits you, smash, and work out your alibi accordingly.
And the medical evidence?
Between 8 p.m. and 11 p.m. Why are you taking such an interest in this case?
Oh, frankly, I do not know. Perhaps because of that strange conversation I had with Major Porter when I was only too grateful for anything to distract me from the bonds. I thought to myself then that something might come of the story he recounted, and something has come of it.
The unexpected has happened?
On the contrary, it is the expected that has happened. The wife remarries. There is a possibility that her first husband is still alive, and he is alive. He may turn up in the place where she is living. He does turn up. There may be blackmail. There is blackmail. The blackmailer may have to be silenced. Ah, ma foi, he is silenced.
Well, I suppose these things run pretty close to type. It's a common sort of crime. Blackmail resulting in murder.
Common? No, what interests me in this case is that it is curiously uncommon. More than that, it is all wrong.
How do you mean?
None of it is the right shape. And when I realize that, the little gray cells begin to stir. I tell you, my friend, this mystery is not at all what it seems. And we are very far from solving it.
In part three of Agatha Christie's Taken at the Flood, Hercule Poirot was played by John Moffat. Superintendent Spence, Robert Lang. Lynn Marchmont, Susanna Corbett. Rowley Claude, Ivan Meredith. Rosalind Claude, Fritha Goody. David Hunter, Tom George. Major Porter, Derek Waring. The Coroner, James Taylor. Taken at the Flood is dramatized for radio by Michael Bakewell and directed by Enid Williams.